This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. From time to time, we venture one flight up from our usual spot to NPR's performance studio, 4A, to give you a chance to listen to some live music and talk with the people who make it about their process, about their lives, about how and why they do what they do. Today, we're honored to welcome one of the great bluegrass bands in the country, the Del McCurry Band. Thanks very much for coming in. Why don't you start us out with a tune?
Thank you. Man gave names to all the animals in the beginning,
a long time ago. Saw an animal upon the hill, chewing up so much grass until she was filled. Saw milk coming out, but he didn't know how. I think I caught a cow.
Man gave names to all the animals in the beginning, in the beginning. Man gave names to all the animals in the beginning,
a long time ago. Trail, a real dirty face and a curly tail. He wasn't too small and he wasn't too big. Oh, I think I caught a pig.
Man gave names to all the animals in the beginning, in the beginning. In the beginning,
a long time ago. The next animal that he did meet had wool on his back and hooves on his feet. Eating grass on a mountainside so steep. Oh, I think I caught a sheep.
In the beginning, in the beginning. Man gave names to all the animals in the beginning,
a long time ago. Saw an animal as smooth as glass, slipping his way on through the grass. Saw him disappear by a tree near a lake. Oh, I think I caught a snake.
Man gave names to all the animals in the beginning, in the beginning. Man gave names to all the animals in the beginning,
a long time ago.
In the beginning, in the beginning,
in the beginning,
in the beginning,
in the beginning,
a long time ago.
The Del McCurry Band, Jason Carter on fiddle, Alan Bartram on bass, Ronnie McCurry on mandolin, Brother Bob on banjo and on guitar, the leader of the band, Del McCurry. And, of course, as you can hear, we have an audience here in Studio 4A. If you have questions for Del McCurry or the members of the band about the evolution of bluegrass, their concerts with Phish, life on the road, our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Del McCurry, let me ask you about that tune. It's a Bob Dylan tune?
It is. You know, I should probably let Ronnie talk to you more about this because it's from an album that he actually put out. It's called Little Mo McCurry. And I guess it is a Dylan tune, huh?
Ronnie?
Yeah, it's a Bob Dylan tune, Neil.
And you also sang the lead on that.
Yeah. I sure did. It's a children's album. So this is all bluegrass-flavored tunes for children.
I was going to say, are there a lot of bluegrass tunes for children?
There's not a whole lot.
You're expanding the repertoire.
Yeah, now there is.
Yeah,
now
there is.
Actually, it's a bad time for Ronnie to be excerpting this record because he's got a cold or something that's happened to him.
Yeah, I've got a pretty bad cold coming on, Neil.
Well, that's nevertheless, you got to figure out a way to perform anyway. I know you're recording a live album, and so it's going to be there with your cold.
That's right.
Preserved forever.
That's right. I'm the lucky one.
A different sound, you know.
Yeah. It's the critics will remark on your departure.
True.
I wanted to add, those of you who are not lucky enough to be here with us in the studio, this is a return to the old days of radio, as opposed to miking a band, each mic for each instrument, a mic for each singer. Del, you prefer to work with just three microphones. Why is that?
Yeah, it's true. Well, you know, Neil, I'll tell you, back in the beginning, or when I started playing, you know, we had eight microphones for a bluegrass band. You know, everything had a mic on it and monitor speakers, and I grew to hate all that, you know. I'm sorry to say. But anyway, I was talking to the boys one time about, you know, that when we started, we all just, like a five-piece band, had just one microphone to play and sing into, you know. Mm-hmm. And whoever got up to the microphone was up front. And so the sound man couldn't change your sound because the guy that's supposed to be featured, he's always featured.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you can't do that today. But the boy said, no, there's microphones today that you can do that with, you know. And so we started experimenting, you know, with one again to start with. And no speakers, you know. And what do you call them? Monitors. I'm trying to forget what they are.
Yeah.
Because I always hated them. Anyway, so we started that way. And then we eventually added one on the right for backup, you know, because we needed like a microphone for backup behind the singer, you know. And so then we found we needed a little bit of bottom end, so we put one over here for the guitar and bass. Mm. And so that's kind of the way we arrived at this.
Now, I've read that once you've rehearsed a tune and once you've recorded it, you don't rehearse it again. How do you remember who's supposed to go up to the microphone when and avoid poking each other's eyes out?
I don't remember. No, just kidding, Neil. But it seems, you know, once you do rehearse it for a record, then you kind of know it pretty well, you know. And I guess that's, and, you know, everybody knows how to get up to the mic and back out without
The scary part is getting them away from the microphone.
Yeah. Sometimes they crowd in there, both of them at the same time, or three. No, I'm just kidding. It's kind of a natural thing, you know, I guess.
Mm. Our guest is Del McCurry and the Del McCurry Band, 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join us, email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Mark, and Mark's calling us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm a musician. I've been playing guitar for a number of years, and it seems like the more music I play, I just get drawn deeper and deeper towards those mountain sounds, and I'm ready to buy a banjo, and I don't want to do it wrong.
Don't do it.
Anyway, don't do it. You're saying I'm just going to break my own heart?
No, just kidding. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I just figured I'd go to the experts. If I'm going to plunk some money on a banjo, can you recommend a brand?
Well, actually, Rob sells banjos. Would you like to call him about that?
Banjos, huh?
He really does.
And he wouldn't steer me wrong, sure.
No, I wouldn't, because I played. This is a brand new thing. I guess you're going to tell him. We'll let Rob tell you all about that. But I played one, and I played a banjo for 10 years.
Yeah?
And I found out I couldn't come up to Earl Scruggs, so I quit.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, so I know a little bit about one. Rob knows more than I do, and so I played one of his new ones last week, and it's great.
Mm. Rob?
Yeah, there's a company. Years ago, there was a company called Recording King.
Recording King?
Recording King, yes. Mm-hmm. They were Gibson banjos that were sold in Montgomery Ward's out of the catalog.
Yeah. So well, if I track one of those
a
now?
New company. Some new guys have taken the Recording King name and started making these Recording King banjos, and they're very affordable, but they're professional-grade instrument. I've got one that I just got it about a week and a half ago, and I haven't had a chance to put the little – there's little spikes, you know, that you put in your banjo neck so you can use a capo and capo mm-hmm. your fifth string.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a chance to take it to anybody and get that done yet, or I'd probably have it here with me. But they're awfully good instruments.
Well, you said affordable,
several.
And that's key for me. So as a beginning player, I guess I'll track that name down.
Can you hold off till we get to Columbus? We'll bring one.
Bring it along. I'll be here. I'll look for your show.
Okay.
And there's also plenty of other good banjos. You know, you can't go wrong with the Gibson. Of course, they're a little more higher priced.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you're playing now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is a 1940. It's an all-original five-string flathead, which is, for people that don't know what banjos are, this is kind of the holy grail of what you want when you're a professional Scruggs-style banjo player.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate the advice, and wish me luck. I know I'm going to need it.
Okay.
Wish you luck, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the
you
call.
Bet. Bye-bye.
We're talking with Del McCurry. Of course, that was Rob McCurry talking about his banjo, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, if you'd like to join us. Also, email talk@npr.org. More music and more phone calls coming up, so stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're joined today by the Del McCurry Band live in Studio 4A. That's Del McCurry on guitar, Ronnie McCurry on mandolin, Rob McCurry on banjo, Alan Bartram on bass, and Jason Carter on fiddle. If you want to see what these guys look like later today, you can watch video of today's performance on our website, npr.org. But right now, if you want to talk with the Del McCurry Band, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And Del McCurry, does it bother you when people say you look like Bob Barker?
Oh, man, I kind of pity Bob Barker.
Well, he's done all right in his career.
Really? No, I never heard that, but I could see it, though. Yeah,
yeah, there's a certain resemblance, you know.
I'm a little older than he is.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. And you know what? I don't think Drew Carey could take your place. Why don't we hear another tune?
All right. Well, we're going to do a little tune that we have on a record. And it's entitled The 1952 Vincent Black Lightning.
Said Red Molly to Jane, that's a fine motorbike. A girl could feel special on any such light. Said James to Red Molly, my hat's off to you. It's a Vincent Black Lightning 1952. And I've seen you at the corners and cafes, it seems. Red hair and black leather, my favorite color scheme. And he pulled her on behind and down to Knoxville they did ride. Said James to Red Molly, here's a ring for your right hand, but I'll tell you in earnest, I'm a dangerous man.
17. I robbed many a man to get my Vincent machine. Now I'm 21 years, I might make 22. And I don't mind dying, but for the love of you. And if fate should break my stride, then I'll give you my Vincent to ride. But they've taken young James 84 armed robbery. Shotgun blast hit his chest, left nothing inside. Come down Red Molly to his dying bedside. When she came to the hospital, there wasn't much left. He was running out of road, running out of breath. But he smiled as she cried. He said, I'll give you my Vincent to ride. Said James, in my opinion, there's nothing in this world beats a 52 Vincent and a red-headed girl. Now Nortons and Indians and Greaves won't do. Ah, they don't have a soul like a Vincent 52. And he reached for her hand and he slipped her the keys. Said, I don't have any further use for these. I see angels on aerials in leather and chrome. She'll beam down from heaven to carry me home. And he gave her one last kiss and died.
I take it that's not from the children's album.
No, it's got shooting and all that stuff. Not too good for kids, you know?
Yeah, I would think so. Red hair and blonde leather, my favorite color scheme. That's good stuff.
It comes from Richard Thompson, you know. He's a songwriter, singer over there in England. And I kind of like that story, you know. And that's why we recorded it.
What you take as an ordinary source for a bluegrass tune.
Yeah, probably not, you know. But I always kind of listen to the story of a song, you know. I kind of like that. It's hard to tell what'll strike a person, you know, when you go to record.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Jane. Jane's calling us from Woodland in California.
Hi, it's James.
James, excuse me.
I'm playing mandolin, too.
Uh-huh.
I've been playing for about 3 years. And it's I was just wondering how he got started and if I could play you a tune.
Ah, Ronnie, why don't you tell us how you got started on the mandolin?
Is this James?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, James, this is Ronnie. I actually started when I was 9. I started playing the violin in orchestra. And I did that for about 2 years, and I kind of laid that down, and I picked up the mandolin again when I was 13. It's the same strings and a lot of the same fingering and noting. So then my dad, he showed me how to some pretty difficult things for some people to learn, but simple in another way. It's just how to hold a pick and how to keep a loose wrist. And it takes some people a long time to learn that, but my dad just showed me that. Well, I played for about 6 months, and he put me in the band. And I just played rhythm, just chopped chords, you know.
Quick, steady, he is. Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, I've been there ever since. And
well, was this, Del, was this part of an effort to keep down the costs of the band?
Yes, it was. Yeah, at the time, it was just a four-piece band, you know, when he came in. I said, well, you can go along and play rhythm, you know, and actually the banjo player and the fiddle player that was in the band, they were used to taking all the breaks, you know, and so after a while, Ronnie started stealing their breaks from them, you know.
Ron, we'll get to your song in just a second, James. But, Ronnie, okay. I just wanted to ask, did you feel pressure from your dad to play bluegrass music?
No, I didn't. I just, you know, I was around it and have always been my entire life.
Well,
so
sure, yeah.
I didn't have any pressure till I get into my late teens and all my buddies and all my friends, they listen to rock and roll music, you know.
Electric guitars.
Electric guitars and all that, so... And, of course, I listened to that, and I tried to play some of that, but I always loved the mandolin, kept playing the mandolin, played in my dad's band the entire time.
Hmm.
So it's over 25 years or something like that we've been together doing this. So I really never had any pressure.
Now, does he still show you stuff?
Yeah, he will. I mean, he'll just say something, you know.
Hmm.
It's kind of a teach by example,
yeah.
You know.
So, James, what are you doing on the mandolin?
I'm going to play Salt Creek.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to put it on speaker. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Here goes.
All right.
That's not bad. 10-year-old James there.
10 years old, James?
Yep.
That's great, man.
I've been playing for 3 years. I actually started on the banjo.
Oh, wow. So you went to the real instrument.
A little sibling dig there.
That's great, James. I hope to meet you someday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hang in there, James. Appreciate the phone call, and we'll appreciate the tune.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's very nice of James to call. Let's go now to, this is, whoops, what have I done? That's what I've done. Julie's with us from South Lake. Where's South Lake?
South Lake Tahoe, California.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I enjoyed seeing Dell and the band at the High Sierra Music Festival in Quincy this last July. You guys probably remember it was sweltering hot. We had a nice forest fire going on over the hill.
Yeah.
I wondered if the band gets involved in choosing their touring schedule or if that's done for them.
Ah, do you pick the dates you tour, or is that done by your agent, Del?
Actually, it's done by the agent, yeah. Of course, you know, some of the places we had been playing, I guess, before we got this agent, you know. But for the most part, the agent and the manager... Both manage. I've got two managers, and they kind of decide, you know, things that are right for the band. I think, you know, and that's good because I don't want that responsibility, really.
Well, we appreciated you coming to Northern California. Thanks very much.
Oh, I enjoyed that, Quincy. That's a nice festival. Yeah.
Thanks very much for the call.
You bet. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Here's an email we have from Eric in Crozet, Virginia. It seems that bluegrass has become more intelligent in recent years. I guess he listened to you in the old days.
yeah.
Groups like the Hackensaw Boys, Old Crow Medicine Show, and others get into the complexities of war, racism, Southern identity, globalization, land rights, a whole range of issues. Not to say that old-time bands didn't have substance to their songs, but the revival of bluegrass seems to have broadened those intellectual horizons while still having fun. It's a great mix. I wonder what you think.
Well, you know, it's always been an intelligent music, I think. Bill Monroe started it, you know, in the middle 40s at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. And I guess this sound came about when he hired Lester Flatt as a lead singer and guitar player, and Earl Scruggs as a three-finger banjo player, you mm-hmm. know. Chubby Wise he was a swing fiddler, I think, before he came into... Bill's band, and Bill taught him to play song breaks, you know, which is what he needed on the fiddle. But, you know, there have always been doctors and lawyers come to our shows years ago, you know, even before we got intelligent.
Well, you were, of course, a bluegrass boy yourself.
I was, yeah.
And you went down with your banjo to audition for Bill Monroe, and you didn't get to play it.
No, I didn't. I had played a date in New York City with him on banjo, you know, before, and he offered me a job then, but I was kind of reluctant, you know, to accept the job. And when I did get there, he told me, said, "Now you go to this certain hotel, Clarkson Hotel in Nashville, and call me, and I'll come in town and get you, you know, or whatever." And so it's been a long time, and I could have forgotten some things. But there was another banjo player there at the same time. And actually what Bill wanted me to do, he needed a lead singer and a guitar player. And he said, "I want you to do that." So that's what I did, and I've been doing it ever since.
Did he know you could play the guitar?
No, I don't think he knew anything about it. I don't see how. Because I never played for him, you know.
We're talking with Del McCurry and listening to the Del McCurry Band. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Del. Del's with us from Loomis, is that right, in Washington?
That's right.
Go ahead, please.
I know Del's been playing mountain music for years and years, and I know he used to play with Bill. But I wondered if you could tell us a little bit of how you got started personally as a youngster and how the music industry has changed over the years.
Hey, Dale, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, you know, I started playing when I was about 9. I started playing guitar first, and then I heard my brother, my older brother, G.C. McCurry, he was older than me, and he could buy a record, so he bought a record of Flat and Scruggs, and that was kind of the turning point for me. You know, I wanted to play banjo after I heard Earl Scruggs, and that would have been 1950, I think. And so I thought, well, you know, there's probably a lot of banjo players, three-finger style, that is. I'd heard a lot of other styles, you know, mm-hmm. like two-finger style and drop thumb or whatever, and
right.
frailing, you know,
mm-hmm.
before that, because I had uncles that played that way. But when I heard Earl, you know, I thought, this is it for me. I want to learn to do that. And that's what got me into the music in the beginning. And like I said, then I played it for 10 years till I started playing guitar and singing lead with Bill Monroe, you know.
Right.
But in those days, you know, the music wasn't that popular. But see, I came along when I was in high school, Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis
right.
and the Blue Suede Shoes guy.
Mm-hmm.
Carl
Perkins, yeah.
Yes, they hit it big, man, and they were just stealing the shows from all the bluegrass guys and all the country people, you know. I mean, it was tough for those guys to make a living about that time. But, you know, I had already heard Earl Scruggs, so Elvis didn't mean anything to me, you know. And but then, you know, after that, the folk boom got a lot of the bluegrass bands a lot of work, you know. It kind of helped the bluegrass bands all over the country. And then, of course, eventually we got our own festivals, you know, the bluegrass festivals. And then that seemed to spread the music worldwide because a lot of folks would come from all the countries in Europe and Japan and everything to those festivals. So, you know, from the back in those early days, it was kind of a, what would you call it, regional music, you know. And so it was hard for those guys to make a living. They had bad roads to run on and...
Right.
And it was before interstates, you know. But the music is worldwide now, so it makes a lot of work for people like us, you know. The old guys paved the way. Bill Monroe and Flat Scruggs, and I could name dozens, you know.
Thanks very much for the call, Del.
Well, we love your music.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email we have from Larry in Florida. Is it true that there's some sort of FCC regulation prohibiting any radio station from playing bluegrass and old country? Also, are bluegrass bands ever allowed to play indoors, or is that some other kind of law?
That's pretty good, Larry. You know, yeah, I tell you, there, I guess, you know, radio is kind of geared to... to better selling, you know, music, I
that
would say.
Other part of Nashville, that town you live in.
It's probably true, yeah, you know. But we do play, once in a while, we do play inside. In fact, today we're playing inside.
So if we're in violation of the law, we're going to keep it really, really quiet.
I know what he's talking about is probably the most of the shows that he sees probably are bluegrass festivals, mm-hmm. which are always outside, you know. But we play... We play from Carnegie Hall to Bonnaroo. You know, that's an inside one and an outside one. So, yeah, it's not against the law. No, we'll keep doing it. You know.
More inside music from the Del McCurry Band when we come back. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking with the Del McCurry Band here in Studio 4A. If there's anything you'd like them to play, well, they'll take a request. Send us an email, talk@npr.org. The members of the band are Del McCurry on guitar, Rob McCurry on banjo, Ronnie McCurry on mandolin, Alan Bartram on bass, and Jason Carter on fiddle. Again, we're videotaping this performance. We'll post it at the website later today. You can check that out at npr.org. And again, any requests, talk@npr.org. And if you'd like to join the conversation by phone, that's 800-989-8255. Why don't we hear another tune now?
All right. You know, we like to do the latest band release that we have is The Promised Land, which is a gospel record.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a request for another gospel tune just a minute ago, but we thought we better do this because it's on our new record.
Okay.
All right.
To that city four square, and by faith and the love of God, I surely will enter there. When some bright tomorrow with the saints I stand, I'll put on a crown and walk around all over God's promised land. Oh, what glory! Oh, what a wonderful day! I'll join the song in the blood washed from all the ages. On that beautiful strand, I'll put on a crown and walk around all over God's promised land. Stream of life. When I join that chorus, heaven's happy band, I'll put on a crown and walk all around all over God's promised land. Oh, what glory! Oh, what a wonderful day! I'll join the song in the blood washed from while the ages roll away. When I get to heaven on that beautiful strand,
I'll put on a crown and walk around all over God's promised land.
the Del McCurry Band in Studio 4A. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Trey. Trey's with us from South Carolina.
Hey, yeah. I just want to thank all y'all for doing what y'all do. I saw you guys probably about 7 years ago up in North Carolina. Y'all played a show with White Thread Panic and String Cheese Incident and Parliament Funkadelic. I know that you guys play places like Bonnaroo all the time where y'all kind of have a hippie audience. I just want to know how playing in a situation like that differs for y'all than playing to an old-timey bluegrass crowd.
Well, Trey, you know, it's just about the same. Well, I guess it is, there is a variety, you know, in our shows that we do, but we still entertain them just the same, you know, as the old. We always do requests and from the audience, and so, you know, there's a lot of similarities. A lot of times we'll have a stand-up audience, you know, in some of the clubs that we play inside, and there might be teenagers, say, or people in their early 20s standing there, and then there might be a guy my age right but next to him, you know. And if I was that old, I don't think I'd stand through a show like that.
I wonder, though, do you worry sometimes that people who come to see you might to see some of these other groups and other kinds of musicians and people who do very not just different kinds of music, but have a different attitude towards the audience sometimes?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times we, yeah, I guess they do, but we get new fans that way, you know, by playing with some of the jam bands, and I know we've got, I had a song one time, and Fish recorded it on a live album, and they wanted us to come and do their festival up in New York, up there on the lake, you know, and I thought, well, we'll go up there and play, you know, and it'd just be another festival, you know.
Sure.
So we got up there, and it was like 77,000 people there, you know. So we got a lot of new fans there, you know.
Yeah, but I've read that it was less comfortable, for example, after you toured with Steve Earle.
It was, I think, you know. He's a great songwriter, you know, and great musician, you know. But I think it was kind of like a clash there. He was probably raised different from me, you know. And I like to keep a clean show, and I always did, you know. So, but Steve, you know, he's got his own fans, and they accept him the way he is, which is good, you know. But I had my bluegrass fans too at a lot of those shows. Well, all of them. I had bluegrass fans come, and so, you know, it just didn't sit right with me that that he would have that kind of language in front of my fans, you know.
Here's an email. This actually from a man named Dell on our blog. On Dell's MySpace profile, they have a photo of Dell, Rob, and Ronnie, along with Jerry Garcia and Bruce Hornsby. I wonder how that all came about and where that took place.
Ronnie can tell you more about that.
Ronnie?
Sure. Well, my father had met Jerry Garcia probably about 1972, I think you said, in Warrenton, Virginia.
I think it might have been, yeah.
With a friend of ours named David Grisman, who's a great mandolin player. And my dad had known David since the early 60s. Yeah. And David was living in New York, and he moved to California, and he met up with Jerry Garcia, and they started a band called Olden in the Way. And so my dad had met him in 72. Well, this picture was from about 1990. I had bought some old-time banjos, and I was living in Pennsylvania. That's where we're from, and I grew up there. And I called David about them, and David said, you know, Jerry might be interested in these banjos, and they're coming to Washington, D.C., and I had been to see the Grateful Dead several times because a lot of my friends that knew about rock and roll, and I said I played bluegrass, they said, oh, you mean, you know, Jerry Garcia, he does bluegrass. So I wanted to see what this was all about, how this intertwined at all, if it did. And I found out they were kind of like folk music plugged in, you know.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we got to...
Plugged into several things.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, I had these banjos. I took them down to him, and I took my dad with me, and my brother went, my wife went, and anyhow, my sister, we all went down there to this show, and I had been to some other shows before. But I'd never been backstage and never had really talked to him. And we sat down and talked for about an hour. And, of course, he bought the banjos, you know. It was probably pennies to him, you know. But whether he bought them because he wanted to or he just bought them just to buy them, I don't know. But he bought the banjos. Bruce Hornsby was also in the band at the time. And anyhow, we sat and talked for about an hour, and he had seen my father with Bill Monroe in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that was the first time that he had ever seen Bill Monroe in California. Dad was out there, and he told me that my dad was a big inspiration for him for playing music. So that's kind of how that conversation ended. And that's where the picture came from, Dale.
So that's and when did your father meet with those guys to get the picture taken?
Well, it was then.
It was at that meeting.
I took him to the Cap Center here.
Hmm, all right.
In D.C., that's where it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you were never seduced by the offer of maybe plugging in and starting a different kind of band yourself?
Well, I've dabbled in it a little bit, but of course I like the true sound of these instruments when you stand beside each other playing. But you never know. I mean, it's fun to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've considered it before, but as far as, you know, the music that we're doing and the way that we do it and the tone that we try to get from the instruments together and singing together, this is what we do.
Yeah. You're also preserving a tradition, not only preserving a tradition, but expanding it. I know you're trying new stuff, and we've been talking about the new kinds of songs you're using, too.
Yeah, you know, it's true. We try to do that. This is a great American art form, and that, you know, I think it deserves more attention than it gets. And to have young guys and young people like James that called and played a mandolin, he lives in California, in Woodland. I think it's just great to be able to carry this on, and it's a challenge for kids to play this music. And a lot of people have said that if you can play bluegrass music, you can play any kind of music.
Hmm.
And many people, like rock and roll people like Jerry Garcia or whoever, they agree, you know. If you can play this music, it's not easy to do. I'm glad to hear about little guys like James out there, you know. And there's a lot of them out there because they like a challenge.
Ronnie McCurry talking to us. We're listening to the Del McCurry Band. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we do have a request. John in Sacramento wants to hear Can't Get There From Here.
Wow. Did we do that one ever?
Did we? You wrote that.
I wrote that and did it. Can't get there from here. I can't remember it. I'm not sure. I just can't recall that. Oh, I did write that with Don Schlitz, a great songwriter there in Nashville. Of course, he did most of it. I helped him a little bit, but you know what? I guess I'll have to turn that request.
Well, we've got another one, as you might suspect. This one for the Tennessee Stud.
No, oh, that's great. That's great, but I met the guy that wrote that song one time.
Yeah. Well, how about High on a Mountain, then?
Well, yeah, that one now, I'll tell you what, I recorded that back, I was probably the first to record that song back in, was it 1970, maybe, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, Ola Bell Reed, her name was actually Ola Bell Campbell, she had a brother, they had a brother-sister duet, and she wrote this song and gave it to me, and she said, now you do it up in your own fashion. And so I did, and of course it was just about like the way she sang it, and it was a title of a record I had back about 1970, 71, 72, somewhere along in there,
mm-hmm.
on Rounder Records. High on the Mountain. Okay.
My life has flown.
ever think of me. Or if time has blotted out your memory. As I listen to the breeze whisper gently through the trees, I'll always cherish what you meant to me. High on the mountain now, wind blowing free, thinking about the days that used to be.
You've been listening to the Del McCurry Band live in Studio 4A with Jason Carter on fiddle, Alan Bartram on bass, Ronnie McCurry on mandolin, Rob McCurry on banjo, and of course Del McCurry leading the group on guitar. Our engineers today were Rob Byers, Drew Reynolds, Burke Hunn, and Jake Widoff. You can go to our website at npr.org to see video later today of the band's performance. Del McCurry, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Tomorrow... Ira Flato will be here. Lynn Neary will be sitting in on Monday. I'll see you Tuesday. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.